The following program features the opinions of the host. Listeners are encouraged to seek their own understanding.
Christians are very familiar with the Mount of Olives. This location on the eastern side of Jerusalem is mentioned many times in the Bible. Events that took place at this location, and will happen in the future according to prophecy, have a supernatural tinge to them. Mount Hermon is a place where angels were able to come down to earth. And that leaves many people thinking that this is some kind of portal. The Mount of Olives similarly has so many unique occurrences that it lends itself to the designation of a portal as well. Is the Mount of Olives a supernatural portal? Welcome to the Ghost in You podcast, a podcast about the weird, the wonderful, and the terrifying in the Bible. I'm Diane Student, your guide and host on this strange journey through the Bible. Episode 14, The Mount of Olives. Har HaZidim is the Hebrew word for the Mount of Olives. This is a limestone ridge east of the old city of Jerusalem, and is named for the vast olive groves that once grew here. The ridge has three peaks, with the highest one being 2,684 feet high. Many people may not be aware that Jews have been buried here for thousands of years. There is a necropolis on the southern ridge. Estimates claim that 150,000 people have been laid to rest here. This location is mentioned for the first time in the Bible in 2 Samuel 15, verses 30 to 32. But David went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives, weeping as he went, barefoot and with his head covered. And all the people who were with him covered their heads, and they went up, weeping as they went. And it was told David, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, please turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. While David was coming to the summit, where God was worshipped, behold, Hussai the Archite came to meet him, with his coat torn and dirt on his head. This passage was at the time when Absalom betrayed his father David, and won the people over to himself in a grand conspiracy to take over the kingship. David ended up fleeing, and it is to the Mount of Olives that he went. And as you can see, he was in deep mourning, as were all the people with him. And it's not surprising that he would choose this place to run to, because the verses tell us that this is where God was worshipped. So he has come here, seeking God, and praying to him for his help. After the temple was destroyed, Jews had to find somewhere else to hold festivals. The Mount of Olives became a place of mourning the loss of their temple. The Temple Mount could be seen from here. It parallels with David climbing the mount with his head covered, as in mourning, when he was fleeing Absalom. And it also foreshadows the rejection of Yeshua as the Jews' king, which would culminate in his crucifixion. So we have all these interesting parallels coming together with the Mount of Olives here. David has gone here as he's mourning, and the Jewish people also go there when they are in mourning because they no longer have their temple. And it was a good place to go, not only because this is where God was worshipped, but this was also where they could see all of Jerusalem and where the Temple Mount had been. The spiritual power of the Mount of Olives led Solomon, who was the son of David, to choose to build temples here to the gods his wives worshipped. King Solomon was considered one of the wisest men to have lived. That seems to be true to a point. He was clearly some kind of sex addict. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Solomon took wives from many foreign lands. Lands Yahweh had forbidden the Israelites from intermarrying with, and he had good reason. In the case of Solomon, his heart was turned from Yahweh. 1 Kings chapter 11, verses 5 to 8 reads, For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not wholly follow the Lord, as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and for Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites, on the mountain east of Jerusalem. And so he did for all his foreign wives, who made offerings and sacrifice to their gods. So now Solomon has taken the Mount of Olives that was a place where the Israelites would go to worship God, and he's made it a place of worship for the gods of these foreign people. And as we've discussed in previous episodes, we know those gods to be the fallen angels. So now fallen angels are being worshipped where only God should have been worshipped. But I don't think Solomon chose this location just because it was a place where God was worshipped. I think there must have been something spiritual about the Mount of Olives that pulled him to do that. Perhaps God was worshipped here, and now these false gods are worshipped here because it's facilitated by something else. Is there an opening here that makes it easier to have some kind of communication, some back and forth with these gods? Ezekiel had some crazy visions. He described one of them in Ezekiel 11. Verses 22 to 24 reads, "Then the cherubim lifted up their wings, with the wheels beside them, and the glory of the God of Israel was over them. And the glory of the Lord went up from the midst of the city, and stood on the mountain that is on the east side of the city. And the Spirit lifted me up, and brought me in the vision by the Spirit of God into Chaldea, to the exiles. Then the vision that I had seen went up from me." The mountain described here is the Mount of Olives. It's on the east side of the city. So here it's saying the glory of the Lord went up from the midst of the city and stood on the mountain. So that's a pretty powerful thing we have going on here. The glory of the Lord. We don't know exactly what the glory of the Lord was or is, if it was actually the appearance of Yahweh, or if it was an essence of Yahweh, maybe it was the Holy Spirit. Whatever it was, it's able to stand on the Mount of Olives, and it chose that spot specifically. The Day of the Lord is a future event in which the world as we know it will end, and I think it's coming here pretty soon based on things that we're seeing going on in the world around us. Zechariah 14 describes elements of this future event, and in verse 4 it says, "On that day his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives that lies before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west by a very wide valley, so that one half of the mount shall move northward, and the other half southward." That's an amazing earthquake. There is a fault line here, so we definitely have a possibility that we could have a splitting of the Mount of Olives. But the key here is the Lord is going to come down on the Mount of Olives on the Day of the Lord. As we move on to the New Testament, there were many key points of Jesus' ministry that were connected to the Mount of Olives. He taught and prophesied to his disciples there, as seen in Matthew 24. In that chapter, Yeshua talks about the signs of the end of the age, the abomination of desolation in the holy place, and the sign of the Son of Man in the sky. This continues into Matthew 25. These passages are known as the Olivet Discourse. After the events of the Lord's Supper, Jesus and his disciples go out to the Mount of Olives. And it is here that he tells them that they will all forsake him. And for those who don't know, the Garden of Gethsemane was at the foot of the Mount of Olives. Luke 22 features Jesus asking for this cup to be removed from him if it were possible, and that's his death. In Luke 24 and Acts 1, Jesus ascends into heaven from the Mount of Olives. Neither passage mentions it specifically, but the Luke passage says that Jesus led the disciples as far as Bethany, and then he ascended. Bethany was on the eastern slopes of the Mount of Olives. So this location was so important that Jesus gave one of the most important sermons of his ministry there. I called it the Olivet Discourse. You may have heard of it by another term, the Sermon on the Mount. This is the mount that took place on. So some of the most important things that Jesus taught to his disciples took place right here on the Mount of Olives. And not only did this important teaching take place here, but these important life events happened here as well. Jesus is praying here to have this taken away from him. We know that he's going to go on to be betrayed here. And another very important event could have taken place here. No one knows for sure exactly where Christ was crucified. What the Bible does tell us is that this was the place of the skull, Golgotha, or as many of us call it, Calvary. This is a derivative of the Latin for skull, Calvary. So when people say that Jesus was crucified on Calvary, it's the same thing as saying he was crucified on Golgotha. There are some who believe that Jesus was crucified on the Mount of Olives. Earlier, I had noted that the Temple Mount could be seen from the Mount of Olives. The temple was an open place that one could see inside. It's very probable that the curtain that hung before the Holy of Holies was visible from a vantage point on the Mount of Olives. The curtain was massive, measuring around 30 feet high and 60 feet across. So it is possible that it was visible from the Mount of Olives. And this curtain, for those that don't know, was to put a separation between people and God. No one was holy enough to go into the Holy of Holies. Only the high priest could go in there one time every year, and God was supposed to be in the Holy of Holies. So you had to have a curtain that was massive enough that there was no way that you could see past it at all. This also means, even though we don't know for sure, the curtain had to have been pretty thick too, that you could not see through it at all. But the main point I'm making here is that if you were standing up on the Mount of Olives and you looked down onto the temple that was there at the time, you could probably see inside of it, and you could probably see the curtain. When Christ breathes his last and commends his soul to the Father, a centurion who was there not only witnessing the scene, but he was also supposed to be guarding the scene, declared that surely this was the Son of God. But what did he see that convinced him of this? Could it be that the centurion could see the curtain torn in two from his vantage point? Perhaps he was on the Mount of Olives? What I'm speaking of here is Matthew 27, verses 51 to 54. It reads, "And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two, from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. The tombs also were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised, and coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. When the centurion and those who were with him, keeping watch over Jesus, saw the earthquake and what took place, they were filled with awe and said, 'Truly, this was the Son of God.'" First, how crazy is it that Yeshua dies and the saints who've died all of a sudden resurrect from the dead? We talk about odd and crazy and supernatural things about the Bible on this podcast, and this has to be one of the most incredible. A bunch of zombified saints who were dead are now walking around. But they're not looking for brains. They're teaching the people. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm sitting in the city and there's some of these previous prophets and teachers who we already know are dead are all of a sudden walking around and talking, it's going to be a little bit freaky. Now, of course, they didn't look anything like zombies. I'm going to assume that they had either their resurrected bodies or they were put back together. But it's a pretty crazy thing to have happen here. This line is a bit confusing because it seems to happen right after Yeshua dies, but then it says they came out of their tombs after his resurrection. So what I'm saying here is you've got this line that's saying Jesus has died, the curtain is torn in two, and these guys are all coming out of their tombs, but then it throws in there after his resurrection. I'm not sure on the timing, but it sounds like tombs opened with the earthquake, which makes sense. If you've got rocks splitting and the earth shaking, you are going to have some tombs that are going to have rocks rolling away from them or splitting open. But the saints didn't go out into the city until after the resurrection. And Yeshua, he was the first fruits of the resurrection. So it really wouldn't be right for these saints to rise before he does. We got 3 days that have to happen here before Jesus is going to do that. So he more than likely resurrected first, and then the saints resurrected. I don't know why Matthew wrote it this way. I don't know if he was just trying to say, okay, all this crazy stuff happened in that short period of time, and I want to make sure that I got this in there. But I also want to make sure that everybody's focusing on the fact that it's Jesus that we're looking at and not these saints walking around. So then he comes back to what's going on with Jesus. I don't know. We are left to wonder if these resurrected saints or zombified saints then go back to being dead or are now off to heaven. We don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us. What we do know is that the book of Matthew is the only one of the four gospels to share this bizarre detail. I don't know why the others don't, because this is a miraculous and crazy event. Why wouldn't they talk about it? Maybe it's something they did want to talk about because it really was that crazy that they're like, people are not going to believe us. It is a wonderful foreshadowing of what we have hope for in the future. Because Jesus died and rose again, we will do the same, because the saints did too. Based on this reasoning, we know the centurion was not witnessing people coming out of tombs. Also, we know it would be weird to say that someone, quote-unquote, saw an earthquake. Sure, people see things move and sway during an earthquake, but it's more of a feel kind of thing. That leaves open the possibility that the centurion saw the curtain split from top to bottom. The passage could be referencing the splitting of rocks, which would be amazing to see as well, but the people of this time knew the significance of the temple curtain. As I said, it shielded them from God and God from them. To have that opened up meant God was among us now, and there was no need to have a shield because Christ had paid the ultimate sacrifice. I leave it to you to make your own decision, but I'm comfortable with the Mount of Olives being the scene of the crucifixion, and I think there's a lot of evidence that lends credence to that. If that is the case, again, we have one of the most important things that happening here on the Mount of Olives, the crucifixion of Christ. The Mount of Olives is not a tall mountain. As I said, it's less than 2,700 feet high. So why would this be where the Lord will return in victory? As was discussed in the Mount Hermon episode, these mountains near the Holy Land are not very big. Not in a world that has the Rockies and the Alps and the Himalayas, to name but a few of the mountain ranges on Earth. What makes these mountains so special? I continue to reason that there must be portals involved. The Mount of Olives must have a spiritual power. Yeshua was drawn to this location and made it his backdrop many times. A portal facilitates travel between dimensions, which explains why this is where Jesus will return with his feet on the Mount of Olives, splitting it in two, as we noted in Zechariah 14. And how poignant that it is from here that Christ ascended, and it will be here that Christ will return. So it's almost like he's opened up the door and gone up to heaven, and then he will come back through that open door again. Numerous churches dot the Mount of Olives to commemorate various spots key to Yeshua's ministry and life. There's the Church of the Pater Noster, Dominus Flevit Church, Church of All Nations, Russian Ascension Church, Church of Mary Magdalene, and the Mosque of the Ascension. Their presence also seems to reflect how important this location is spiritually. Churches, temples, mosques, and cemeteries have all made the Mount of Olives their home, and I think it's because the Elohim and Yahweh himself all come and go from here. And what of portals? We have mentioned them before when we've had episodes on Mount Hermon and also the Tower of Babel. I believe that that was another portal. Psalm 78, verses 23 to 25 seems to describe a portal. Yet he commanded the skies above and opened the doors of heaven, and he rained down on them manna to eat, and gave them the grain of heaven. Man ate of the bread of the angels. He sent them food in abundance. By the way, here we have another oddity in the Bible, manna. It showed up every morning and fed the Israelites who wandered around in the desert for 40 years. It was full nutrition that they were able to survive on for 40 years. I can imagine they got a little bit bored with it, but maybe not. I mean, if it's the food of angels, it must taste pretty good. Humans eating what angels eat. Pretty amazing. And then, of course, there was Jacob's ladder, where the patriarch Jacob saw angels descending and ascending to heaven. John writes in Revelations 4:1, "After this I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice, which I had heard speaking to me like a trumpet, said, 'Come up here, and I will show you what must take place after this.'" Could this door be a portal? It's clearly not on earth because he's told to come up here. They describe these things as doors multiple times in the Bible, and that's basically what a portal is, a door. And Yeshua describes a portal in John 1, verse 51, when speaking to Nathanael. And he said to him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." The Bible clearly supports that portals are a thing. Portals seem to be areas that could foster strife, particularly if left open. Because remember, when I say Elohim, I'm talking about angels. Could be fallen angels, could be the angels that have stayed with God. And they all seem to be able to come through these places, go back and forth. So these would be places where you would have strife, because maybe you would have the angels that are with God trying to keep the angels that left God from coming through these portals. And we don't understand how demons work. Are demonic entities just stuck here on the earth plane, or can they go back and forth through portals as well? When it comes to paranormal investigation, it seems that demons can come through and go back and forth through portals. And if you think about it, Israel, and specifically Jerusalem, has always been a place of conflict. Doesn't matter what time of history it is, There's always conflict going on there. Could it be because there are these open portals there? Mount Hermon, the River Jordan, and the Mount of Olives? The Mount of Olives is a place of prayer, a place of teaching, a place of hope, a place of redemption, a place of fulfilled prophecy, and a place of victory. Could this also be a place with a door to heaven or other dimensions? Is there a portal at the Mount of Olives? The ghost in you knows. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode. If you'd like to send me some comments, you can do that at theghostinyoupod@gmail.com. And please follow us at Instagram, YouTube, and BitChute. May God bless you and keep you. The Ghost in You podcast is researched, written, edited, and produced by me, Diane Student. Our theme music is by Muse Music with Groove Studios. All of the music is by artists from filmmusic.io.